Hello, 90 Day Fiancé fans. Welcome to 90 Day Fiancé Honestly, the podcast that brings you an unfiltered, no-nonsense take on all things 90 Day. I'm Bea.
And I'm Amy. We promise you two things: no tangents and zero interruptions from ads. We're diving deep into the world of international love, decoding all of the relationship drama, and serving up the truth with a side of humor.
So whether you're a seasoned 90 Day fan or just starting the K-1 visa journey, buckle up for a ride filled with love, laughter, and of course, honesty. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Bea.
So we had last night's show, which was episode 5 of season 8 of Happily Ever After. What'd you think?
I don't really have any solid opinions on this one. I found...
What are your fluid opinions?
It wasn't fun. I found myself almost disassociating when I was watching it. And then really? I had to rewind it because I'm like, well, what just happened here? What's even going on?
And yeah,
there wasn't enough substance to keep my attention, I guess.
It feels like they're flailing around until something good happens.
Yeah.
Something enough. Really juicy.
Nothing really good happened.
No. In fact, some somewhat bad things happened with a couple of the couples, which we'll get to in sequence. So let's dive right in, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, let's start with Emily and Kobe. What's happening with them?
Well, they go to that handball tournament. That's the first thing that I remember. And, you know, we saw Kobe tell Emily that his friends were concerned about their relationship because, you know, she's a typical American woman, in their words, not mine, just naggy and controlling. And she's like, well, now I get to meet his friends and, you know, I can show them that I'm not what they think I am. And then he hurts his knee and she does nothing but nag him and smother him. And she just played into exactly what his friends were thinking that she was. And I don't know if that was an act. I don't think it was, because she's just the personality that we've seen from her already. I can see her just being that helicopter wife and mom. And that doesn't look good in front of his friends.
No, she's taking it exceptionally personally, the comment that Kobe made about how his friends have this perception of marriage, which is distinctly Cameroonian, and she is not that. But she's taking it as a personal attack somehow, I feel, rather than just recognizing that it is a cultural difference. There's really nothing she can do about it. But she takes on this issue of, I'm going to prove that I'm not bossy, in such a way that completely fails abysmally, because she is who she is. She's loud, she's brash, she's in your face. Although Kobe is hoping against hope that Emily will make a good impression, there's just no way that it's going to happen. She is a loud, bossy American woman, American wife. And when she went to comfort or check on Kobe when he hurt his knee, I felt like, oh, well, this is okay. But then it started to be a bit much. You know, she stayed a little bit too long. She lingered over it a bit too long. She fussed a bit too much. You can see Kobe's expression change. He's getting more and more uncomfortable as she's staying longer and saying more things. And I thought to myself, they should have been smart about this. They should have had a code word that let Emily know when it's too much and when she should back off a little bit. And to make it clear to her that, no, this is not, I'm not telling you to shove your personality down the hole. I'm just saying, in this particular moment, culturally speaking, you're going to overstep. And so I'm telling you to back off, just because we are in Cameroon right now. We're not in the States. Like, if they'd had a code word, I think it could have gone so much better.
That actually is a really clever idea. I hadn't thought about that. I just really wanted her to shut up. So if they had a code word, you're right. I think it would have been effective, but I also wonder if she would have just ignored it, because she was just so overbearing in that moment. But what really, really irritated me was when she got, like, when she was about to leave and she was like, oh, wife knows best.
Mm-hmm.
You really think that's appropriate? And also, also, we haven't heard a lick about this wedding. You know, we were talking about it when they first said that they were going to have this Cameroonian wedding. And you're like, how is that going to work? How long are they going to cook for? Like, is there going to be help? What are they, like, how is this going to work? And they haven't talked about it at all.
Well, clearly, Emily's parents have been tasked with this gargantuan feat. And they're going to take care of it all in the background. So that Emily and Kobe can just go ahead, relax, play handball, go do stuff. The parents were there, but I'm sure that they were texting the caterers in the background and making arrangements for the flowers while the game was proceeding. Emily doesn't do anything for that kind of event. She doesn't make any plans.
No, she doesn't. But I feel like that's a lot on her parents' plate. Just, yeah, you know, having to plan this massive dinner party, wedding thing, and then also having to take care of the kids.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
All while being in a foreign country.
Yeah, the grandparents' work is never done. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're there for. They are built-in babysitters and event planners for when you become an adult and a parent. We all know that.
Do we?
Well, Emily sure does.
Well, this is just Emily's life. You know, her parents are going to do everything for her, as we have seen.
Yes. So Kobe is pretty embarrassed after the handball game because of Emily's coddling. And he actually says that she felt that she was treating him like a baby. Yikes.
I think that's accurate, though, because it seems as though, you know, he was a child and he was playing on a trampoline. And she's like, don't do it because you're going to get hurt. And then she basically said, I told you so. Mm-hmm. How is that helpful?
Not tactful whatsoever.
No.
And then to pile on top of that lack of tactfulness, she goes and she confronts Kobe's friends head on at the end of the game in the spirit of, oh, I'm just going to win them over. I'm going to go over there and charm them all. It doesn't exactly go that way, though. She approaches them very brashly. Well, her approach is very forward. It's very head on. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But again, in a culture where women are supposed to be quiet and submissive, this is not the right approach to take, even just open the conversation. So she goes over there, she starts chatting with them. We learn from the friends that women are not allowed to speak to their husbands with authority. That's the words that they used, with authority. They feel that Emily did that when she addressed him about his knee. And on top of that, you're not allowed to say things with authority to your husband when you're in public. Like, it may be okay in private, but in public, it's absolutely forbidden.
Mm-hmm.
So she tries to tell the friends that she doesn't need them talking to Kobe about her relationship, about their marriage, about what's going on between the two of them. So she's basically saying, back off, guys. Again, very forward, not really appropriate in this situation or the setting. And then they start talking about Kobe before he met Emily and as he was meeting Emily in China. And he mentioned that he had a girlfriend before he left, but that girlfriend was still under the impression that she and Kobe were together when Kobe met Emily, slept with Emily, and Emily fell pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
She did not have that information. So she was clearly very uncomfortable. And I was like, uh-oh, is she going to explode and make this situation 1,000 times worse by having an explosion? She didn't. She kept it sort of under control, but you could tell that she was just steaming. And she gives a very fake, it was great hanging out with you, and then walks off. Poor Kobe.
It was very difficult to watch. I felt like, you know, it was one thing for her to, you know, be all I told you so about his knee, but then to approach his friends like that, it kind of like stripped him of his dignity in front of his friends.
Yep.
Like, it just completely diminished his manhood in the face of, I guess, in the culture in front of his friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And great work, Emily. Great work.
Absolutely. Like, why she couldn't have just adopted a slightly different approach, maybe left it until they were alone in private, just said, are you okay? How's your knee? And then that's it. She knows. She's had these conversations with Kobe about what the culture is like and what she's expected, how she's expected to behave, but she just can't do it. No. Or won't do it.
I think it's a combination of both, because I think she really wants to maybe make a stand in front of his friends.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of like insert herself where she doesn't belong because she needs to have a certain level of control.
Yeah, that could be. I also would assume that it's partly to do with her lack of really situational awareness and self-awareness. She just thinks, it doesn't really matter. I can be who I am and nobody's going to be able to say anything about it, or mm-hmm. nobody's going to care. Nobody's going to take offense.
Which has been mm-hmm. fostered by her parents, because she can do absolutely no wrong and she still lives with them. All yeah. of her kids, soon to be another one. And for what?
Yeah.
Her parents have failed her.
Her parents have failed her by giving her absolutely everything that she's ever wanted. It's such a sad situation, isn't it? Where you try as a parent to be the best for your kid and to give them every opportunity, but in the end, they just turn into mush.
Yeah.
And but Emily is mush.
Yes. I'll accept mm-hmm. that. Yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm. If you don't have any further comments, we will move on oh. to Jasmine and Gino, who are finally sitting down to talk about what happened when they were at the photographer's studio and Jasmine had an emotional moment and she decided to leave the room, went for a brisk walk down the street with Gino in hot pursuit. So this is her time to finally tell Gino and to have him really listen to the fact that she misses her kids so much. She's so depressed, anxious, worried, stressed out about the situation with not being able to see them for up to 2 years, that she is seriously considering going back to Panama and getting a divorce. Heavy stuff.
I think she communicated well in this situation. There wasn't the screaming and the overdramatics, which was a relief. And Gino seemed to take it at face value, really took it to heart. And, you know, he did agree to hiring a lawyer. He said he wants to do all of it himself, but agreed to having a lawyer look over it, which they should have done from the very beginning. But I thought that his concession and compromise was appropriate, because, I mean, you don't need the lawyer to do the entire thing, but it is safe to have someone review it prior to submitting it again. So that's going to save the money, which I think is really what Gino was getting at.
Yeah, it. I think it's both things. It's saving money for Gino, but it's also a point of pride. He's going to do it all himself, right? And mm-hmm. yeah, he is conceding a little bit to her by acknowledging that he should have somebody look over the paperwork before it's submitted. But still, how much of a savings is that really going to be for him? I have no clue. You know, why not just have them take care of it and not stress over anything?
I think it's a point of pride for him.
Yeah, exactly. But he does say, I'm going to get so the order of priority for Gino is get the paperwork for the green card for Jasmine first. Second, get the paperwork for her travel permission done so she can travel back to Panama. After which, he will start working on the children's paperwork. Did you find anything about that interesting, shall we say?
I can kind of follow his logic, because like in his mind, get the green card, get her travel docs so that she can actually go see the kids in the meantime. Is it backwards? I don't know. Again, I still think this entire storyline is fake, so I didn't put too much thought into it. But what are your thoughts?
I found that the order a little bit sus. Like, I would have thought that the first thing to do is to correct the paperwork that initially didn't have the kids on it, to put them on that so that they are then in the system and somebody is working on that in the background. Then I would go green card. Then I would go permission letter for travel. I don't know if that makes any sense in the actual immigration world, but I did find it a little odd that he was first focusing on her green card which she would only need at this point for work and travel purposes. But if her main concern is getting the kids to the U.S. as soon as possible, then why are they not looking at that paperwork first?
I think his idea is to get her to see her kids sooner rather than later. And that would obviously be a quicker process. So I think that was his line of thinking.
Yeah, maybe. The one thing that I did want to note, just because I found it so, it was a very poignant moment for me when Jasmine was describing how alone she feels. And of course she is, because we know that her husband has been icing her out for the last couple of weeks, ever since they had this appointment at the lawyer's office and they discovered that the kids can't come for up to 2 years. And it felt so, so tragic for me that she's stuck in the US without her kids, without her mom, her sister, her family, her support system. She only has her husband. Granted, of course, she has her husband's family as well, but the immediate person that you look to is the one you live with, usually. And he's been giving her the cold shoulder for so long that she's, you know, having her alopecia reoccur. She's feeling so isolated and alone. And I was just like, oh, this is so sad for Jasmine. And I really felt it when she said she feels really alone and Gino's just not there for her.
Yeah, really isolated.
And it's sad that he can't see past his own pride and whatever else it is that's been keeping him from being a comforting partner to her, that he could put up those walls and just continue on and not give her a little bit of comfort, knowing that she is so far away from everything that means something to her.
I think we all expect more from both of them, to be fair, but
yeah.
More so him in the circumstance, you know?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And their next segment is quite different in tone to the previous one. They're on a date. So Gino is still smarting over this remark that Jasmine made a few episodes ago when she said that he's not ready to be a father in her eyes, which is a very painful thing to say to somebody else. But you can see that even though Jasmine is trying to go into damage control by talking to him nicely and having a good conversation over this dinner that they're having, that she's still not retracting that statement. And she still probably means it deep down inside. Did you feel that?
I felt like she was trying to tell him very kindly that they're not having kids.
So she brings up this argument, if you want to call it, about how having children now, as opposed to when she was in her 20s, means that she would be being a mom when at a point in her life when she has a lot less energy. And then she's saying to Gino, and that would, you know, be even more so for you since he is 57, 58. He's getting up there. Yeah, it was a sort of a kind way to try to get a conversation started about maybe we should not. Have kids.
I think it was her no without actually saying no.
Yeah. She does, in fact, say no to us, the audience, in her aside, in her confessionals, when she's talking about how she really has to focus on the fact that her kids aren't there and that her mom is sick. She's got a whole bunch of stuff going on in Panama and she can't even think about starting a new family now. And that to me is. That's the end of it, because she is 37 or 38 right now. Flash forward to a couple of years when her kids are in the States and they're all getting settled. Is she going to want to start trying to have a kid when she's 40, when she's already had fertility issues when she was in her 20s and she had kids? There's no way.
And her body.
Yeah. It, of course, there's that more shallow reason why she wouldn't be wanting to have kids, in order to preserve the perfect body that she's created out of her many surgeries. But still, yeah, just the biological reason is that she's getting too old. She had difficulty in the past conceiving when she was at a point in her life when she would have been extremely fertile. and you're heading into your 40s, you have like a 5% chance of conception thereabouts when you turn 40, and then it goes down, down, down every year afterwards. So she's waiting it out. It's a win by attrition. She's going to wait it out. She's going to starve Gino out of the castle. No kids.
Is that fair?
No, it is definitely not fair, because she knows she doesn't want to have kids, but she's not being totally honest about that with him.
I can see them both playing this game against each other.
But didn't Gino say in the past that he didn't care if they did have kids, that he just wanted to be with Jasmine?
He did, but then he said he wanted them.
Right. So they're both waffling.
Yeah.
And not really saying what they actually want.
Yeah. I don't know. It could be a production thing, just trying to keep this whole kid thing going, just because it's so conflicting with what they're both saying. And then, you know, Jasmine's kids theoretically coming up. I don't know.
Personally, I think that they're not going to get to the point where she's going to have kids. I think she's just trying to avoid the subject and avoid the timing and come to a place where her body is no longer capable of producing kids. And then she'll say to Gino, oh, I'm sorry, Gino, what can I say? I can't have babies anymore. I'm too old. And that's going to be her way of getting out of it.
And it's only going to take time.
Yeah. And they've got plenty.
They've got time. But one last comment I wanted to make, too, was when they were at the dinner, Gino was talking about the last time that they went out, and he was going on and on about the salad bar and the buffet. And she's like, we only went because he had coupons. And I thought that was so funny, because he was so animated about how much he loved this buffet. And, you know, it wasn't just the salad bar. It was all the things on the salad bar. Just I thought it was so funny. And then Jasmine with her fettuccine, what the hell did she do? And then she was talking about getting ketchup to go on top of it.
It's an abomination.
Thank you. Yes, that really bothered me. I'm like, for someone who seems to be so cultured, that is one of the worst things I have seen people eat on 90 Day Fiancé. And you know I pay attention to that.
You do. You're an authority on the food of 90 Day. Yeah, I think she even called it, this is what the royal people would eat. This is, you know, gourmet food. And I was shaking my head, just going, oh, if an actual Italian chef could see what you're doing to the food, you would be cast out of the restaurant and told never to come back again.
But did you see the way that she was shoveling that food into her mouth? It kind of seemed like she was super stoned and had the munchies. Or she was binging because she was emotionally out of control.
I'll go for option number two, please.
She doesn't seem like the type to smoke weed, but just the way that she was eating, I'm like, I've seen that, many times.
Are we ready for Patrick and Thais?
With my very, very limited, non-existent notes, yes.
Okay. Patrick also has knee problems. What is going on in the 90-day world? All the men are having braces on their knees and can't do sports and stuff. But his seems a little bit more serious than Kobe's. Maybe he's at the before and Kobe's at the after stage. So he's got this thing on his leg. And the issue for them is the timing. They're going to Brazil in, what, a week or less?
Mm-hmm.
And having a leg injury while traveling, it's not an ideal situation, is it, Amy? I wonder if you would know anything about that.
I do believe I would. Yes, I do believe the last two times. Two times that we went to Portugal, I had a cast.
Yeah. And what are the odds of both times we go to Portugal, you have a cast on your leg?
But it was different feet.
I don't care if it's different feet. It's just, what are the odds? We go to Portugal twice in our lifetimes together, and both times you have this thing on your leg, which does, by the way, get you through the customs line very, very quickly, which is wonderful. However, I certainly felt for Patrick and Thais seeing that he had this thing on his leg, because I was thinking of you and you're hobbling along the boardwalk on the beach in Portugal and having to deal with people staring at your cast.
Yeah. And just not like fun. The shoe, the other shoe that I was wearing wasn't the same height as the boot. So it was like, it was giving me hip issues too. And it's just, it's so exhausting because like your body's trying to heal, but I'm still trying to, you know, enjoy the sunshine. And it was so hot.
Yeah.
So hot. So yeah, I felt for him too. And especially because they have a 6 month old in tow. That's, I mean, you're already exhausted from having an infant and now you have this big injury and then travel on top of that. He might get bitchy.
The brace that he had on his knee looked so substantial that it appeared to me, and I'm by no means an expert on this kind of thing, that he couldn't bend his knee. Like it looked like it had metal parts to it that would really restrict the movement of his knee.
Well, he did that thing where he was like, he was lifting his knee. So he was bending it to a certain point. But to me, it kind of looked like more of a stabilizer. A little more substantial, quite a bit more substantial than just like a tensor bandage or something.
Jeez. Not ideal timing. And then Patrick says that he's going to, when they're in Brazil, going to be working on his relationship with Thais's dad, because we know things are not good between the two of them, mostly due to the fact that Thais kept Patrick and their relationship a secret. And so when she finally revealed that she was with Patrick, it was basically, oh, and we're married, much like they did in the last 90 Day Fiancé.
With Clayton and Annalie.
Yes, exactly.
I find it disappointing on Patrick's behalf because he didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah. It's totally unfair to the other person that they're kept a secret, that they're not allowed a chance to establish a good relationship with your parent or parents because you are a secret. And then immediately it makes the parent dislike you because you're the person who has taken away their child and married them in secret. So surely you must be the one who's influencing the child to do that. Not that your own child could ever be so secretive and deceitful to employ this kind of ruse. You know what I mean? So they can't ever blame their own kids for this. They can only ever blame your partner. Sure. Anyway, they're at home together, Patrick and Thais, with their baby. And guess who comes over? John.
Jean. I love the way that she says it. I love it.
Yeah. Jean. It's almost like she's saying Jean.
Yeah.
But not without making the effort.
Yeah.
Jean. So at this point, riddle me this. At this point, he is engaged to Megan. But we just saw in last week's episode of The Single Life Tell All that he proposed to Megan on the show. How in the timing, filming, television world is this possible?
I have no idea. I didn't know that about the tell-all.
Okay. I just found it really odd. Like something is off. Either the tell-all thing was all fake, all a show for ratings, or, well, I guess there is no other alternative because he's coming into their kitchen and talking to them about being engaged to Megan, which he is. So my brain just started going into
overdrive.
That'll do.
Yeah, you and I have struggled with this timeline with the overlap of the multiple spinoffs in addition to the original show. So I probably just didn't pick it up because I just wouldn't understand it anyway.
All right, regardless, he's engaged, he's there, and he suggests, as they're talking about their upcoming trip to Brazil, that he go along with them, and I say set up. Of course, this is all fakery. They've already planned that John is going along with them, or at the very least, John and Patrick agreed between the two of them that John would tag along on this trip. And then they're just going to spring it on Thais and she'll have to accept it, which is basically what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I really felt like none of this was real.
No, I don't think so either, especially because John kept saying, I like parties. But we know, we know that you do. And also, he's engaged. So is he not planning a wedding? Does he not need to discuss this with his fiance? So it adds credence to the idea that this has already been decided. So he's already talked to her and it's already a thing. Because I think they said that they were leaving in just a couple days. That's not a lot of time to get all your ducks in a row in order to go for, what are they going for, 2 weeks or something?
Yeah, and also, John doesn't even live in Las Vegas anymore. He moved in with Megan in her place in Texas a long time ago. Some time ago. I don't know what the time frame actually is because it's so convoluted at this point. So he's living in Texas. He's engaged to Megan. And yet he just happens to be in Las Vegas a few days before they're taking off for their Brazilian trip.
Yeah, I think Patrick said that he was there for work or something, but it makes sense that he would get there a couple days early to get everything organized so that they could all fly out together.
Yeah, again, like if he was in Las Vegas for work, he presumably would have had to get the time off work in order to go to Brazil for a couple of weeks, plus arrange it all with Megan. So, yeah. Cheaters. It's all fake. Are we ready for the next couple? This is a big one.
Yes.
So this is Nicole and Mahmoud. When we last saw them, Nicole and Mahmoud had a big argument. She decided to go out to dinner on her own to meet her friends. It was supposed to be a chance for Mahmoud to meet her friends, but of course he was staying at home sulking. So she shows up to dinner by herself. She explains what happened to her friends between her and Mahmoud, but she kind of leaves out a lot of the stuff that is on her. Like, she also threatened divorce. She also was going to extremes and acting in a very irrational way towards Mahmoud rather than trying to work on their problems. So she's not really giving the whole picture to her friends.
I don't think that she was, or that she was capable. I don't know if it's capable in that moment or just capable in general of acknowledging just how toxic she is as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know which one it is either. I don't know if she's just suffering from immaturity, even though she is 40. You'd think she'd have enough life experience. Or if it's just because her emotions are still so high from having had this fight with Mahmoud before dinner that she can't really think about it properly and take responsibility for her part. Anyway, the friends float this idea around of all of them going back to Nicole's house so that they can surprise Mahmoud and celebrate his arrival to the U.S. at her place.
Excellent, excellent idea.
Yeah. I don't see that there'd be anything wrong with surprising this man who has just had a fight with his wife. His wife has left the house to go have dinner with her friends, and everybody shows up at the house without having resolved any of the issues that you were fighting about. Sounds like presumably a recipe for a perfect evening.
So this is after they've had dinner. They have obviously consumed several beverages.
Mm-hmm.
And then continue to do so once they get there.
But Nicole is not drinking. She doesn't drink.
She looked like she was.
Really?
I got the sense that she was.
I thought she wasn't. I mean, I don't know what she was doing at the restaurant, but I know when they returned to the house, she was just having non-alcoholic beverages.
Yeah, I think she was just having like a soda of some sort. But
mm-hmm.
just the way that she was behaving and like posturing and like when she was yelling at him, like it's just so like off the cuff and random, and like her face got so red, and it just, I got drunk vibes from her.
Okay. Well, let's set the stage, because when they get to the house, I think it's important to point this out. All of the lights are on. Mahmoud, yes, he is sitting in the bed. He's not in the sheets lying down. He's not in pajamas. He's not actually sleeping. He's just sitting on the bed. All the lights are on in the room. And everybody walks in and he's like putting on this pretense that he is sleepy, that he is out of it, that he's kind of, he's delicate because he's in this half awake state. And is speaking very quietly and just acting in a very small way. Like his shoulders are kind of hunched forward. His body language is all very, oh, I'm just poor Mahmoud. I'm so sleepy. I deserve a rest. And all of you noisy people are here drinking your booze. And it's, I mean, he's clearly pissed off. Clearly. You can see it in his jaw. His jaw is like clenched the whole time. Yeah. And when the friends ask Nicole if they can have an alcoholic beverage, he gets really, really angry. And he starts like leaning against the wall and, oh, I have to be propped up by this wall because I'm so tired that I might even just stumble and fall over. The friends pick up on this and they're saying to him, oh, Mahmoud, you look so tired. You look so sleepy. Are you okay? And he's just kind of swaying there, pretending. So clearly pretending to be tired, to be in this super vulnerable state. And yet underneath it all, you can really see he's seething.
He's vibrating.
Yeah. Yeah. It's absolutely astonishing how he can do those two things at the same time. I find it really frightening.
Possibly because he's had so much practice with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they ask, why didn't you come out to dinner? He lies. He says, it's because I'm so tired and I couldn't. I'm just so sleepy. But Nicole gets livid at the fact that he's lying to her friends and she tells him to tell the truth. He then admits, okay, well, yeah, we were having a fight. Things weren't very good. And then he excuses himself and he just leaves. Yeah, the drama. I can't take it.
And then what did she yell at him when he was walking away?
She said something extremely rude. Yeah, I don't remember exactly what it was, but she was rude. Even the friends were like, Nicole, like, don't calm down or don't say that. They were really trying to defuse her in a couple of moments there. And clearly, like you said, either she was out of control because she was a little bit drunk and so her emotions were heightened, or there was something else going on, but she was quite nasty towards Mahmoud, and he was his usual self of pretending, oh, I'm the victim. I'm so sleepy and tired, and all I want to do is just lie down and sleep. And yet, there is this undercurrent of, it's like violence.
Mm-hmm.
It's violence without hitting, without, well, not really without saying, because he does say some things that are not good, but you can feel it. It's palpable.
It's that eggshell thing again.
Totally. Totally eggshells. But when he gets into a situation where he doesn't like what Nicole is saying or doing, he does one of two things. He threatens divorce, I'm leaving, back to Egypt, etc. Or he leaves. He's just, I'm not going to allow you to speak to me anymore. And I'm going away and this is completely unresolved. You have no resolution, but I'm going to walk away as if I am the victim.
Of course he is. You know what? Just leave. Bye.
Yeah, I know.
Like, never see him again.
I wish. Okay, we have two more couples left. Woohoo! Do you feel like going to New York?
I prefer to go to Newark.
Well, I only have a ticket for New York, so you're out of luck.
Unfortunately. Okay, let's go.
Yeah, let's go. Ashley and Manuel will be our companions. Is that okay with you?
No.
Yeah, it was so funny the way they arrived, and they're all like pumped and woohoo, we're in New York. This is so exciting. They get in a car and they're stuck in traffic. And then Manuel turns into the child who's having the tantrum. I'm hungry. I'm tired. I'm sweaty. And when are we there? Well, how much further? When are we going to get there? And Ashley just has none of it.
No, she's way, way, way too excited about being where she's being. But I thought it was funny when they get to the hotel and he's just like, I am so hungry. And I actually wrote down hangry. And then she starts into this whole explanation. You know, there's a combination of two words called hangry. And this is what it is. And he's like, yes, yes, that is me.
That is me.
Yeah.
But I love the way she recognizes that he's hangry, but then she's like, okay, first I want a coffee. Now I'm going to do a tarot card reading. Oh, and now I'm going to take a shower. Like, if if he's hangry, if he's genuinely hangry, just take 20 minutes, go downstairs, find a deli or some kind of, I don't know, a Subway store and a pizza joint, anything. Grab a sandwich, go back up, then shower, coffee, tarot card reading. She just has no mechanisms by which she can cope in an adult way with what Manuel does.
I thought it was just so stupid that she was like, okay, I acknowledge that. You know, I will make my coffee while you're in the shower, and then I'll have my shower. But he doesn't appear to go into the shower, and she doesn't even start making her coffee. She just like opens the machine, and then she's like, oh, I gotta read the tarot. I gotta see what's happening. You couldn't have done that on the plane. You couldn't have done that before you left. Why is that in the moment?
And this is the thing. Like, if you need to read the tarot cards because you need to assess the situation, why don't you just look around and assess the situation? Why do you need that information from a card?
Read the room. It's a lot easier than having to pull out your deck and then, you know, to assess the cards.
And it's less time. People don't get as hangry. You can go have your granola bar faster.
Do you really think it's smart to do that when he's already hangry and he also hates what you do anyway? Now you're just adding fuel to the fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, this is why I have no sympathy for Ashley. So 2 hours later, 2 hours later. Can I say that again? 2 hours later. They're finally ready to go out and meet Jonathan. What were they doing? If you're hungry, why didn't you just go get food? You're showering, you're doing your hair, you're doing makeup, doing a coffee, getting a tarot read, have a nap, read a book.
Well, they probably had to communicate a little bit before they left too. So
oh, God.
Probably added to it.
Yeah. So Manuel is clearly enjoying New York, and this neighborhood that they're in, it has a distinct Ecuadorian feel to it. There's a lot of Spanish-speaking people around. There are a lot of Ecuadorian flags. He's joking about, oh, I'm going to stay in New York and I'll just send you back to Rochester, which I thought was
not a joke.
No, it's not a joke. That's Manuel. That's who he is. Yeah, I'm going to ditch you because I found a location that I actually enjoy and I don't need you here. Everybody speaks my language.
Yeah, he doesn't need her anyway.
No. And then when they meet with Jonathan, Jonathan is talking about how they have this particular festival. I think it's in August to celebrate the liberation of Ecuador. And Manuel immediately turns to Ashley and says, oh, can I stay beyond the time that we're supposed to be here so that I can enjoy the festivities? And Jonathan's like, yeah, you can stay at my place and it'll be great. Manuel just doesn't give a crap about Ashley. Just send her home on the plane by herself. That's fine. It's just your wife.
Mm-hmm. What does he care? It's not like he thinks about her anyway.
Nope. So Ashley then decides that this is the time to ask Jonathan about Manuel's personal private life. Of course, because she can't get that information out of Manuel. And this situation is not awkward whatsoever.
It happens so often that she has these conversations with other people about him in front of him.
Yeah. When your wife is talking about you in front of you to a family member or a friend, doesn't that tell you that you're not giving her enough information about who you are and what you're doing? I mean, she's not asking personal information like, what was he doing on the night of January 15th at 6:30 p.m.? It's not like she's asking questions that are very, very intrusive or specific. She just wants to know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So she's asking Jonathan about these phone calls that he has with Manuel. And Jonathan confesses, well, actually, Manuel doesn't answer the phone all the time when I call. So I don't speak to him as much as you seem to think that I speak to him. And then the question is, well, who is he talking to? Do you think that there's anything mysterious about Manuel's talking to whoever it is that he's talking to on the phone 24/7?
I think it's been a big thing since the very beginning. Remember when he didn't have a phone or something and he needed to have his own phone? He couldn't just use hers. I still am of the belief that he has multiple women everywhere and he's constantly talking to all of them. And did you notice when she asked Jonathan if he was talking to one of the baby mamas or baby mama or whatever, the look on Manuel's face, like his eyes just kept darting, and Jonathan picked up on it. Mm-hmm. He was like, I was not honest.
Yeah, there was definitely a signal that went between the two of them about, you know, keep your mouth shut, bro mm-hmm. code kind of thing.
At first, I thought she asked him that when Manuel was in the bathroom. I was like, that was probably a good time. And then it pans over and he's sitting right there. And I'm like, mm-hmm. bitch, you should have waited.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
So all we learn about the baby mama is that she has been in touch with Jonathan to find out about what's going on with Manuel since he got married.
I don't believe that.
No, I can believe that she's getting in touch with Jonathan, but why would she need to know what's going on in Manuel's life? What is she actually asking about? And why does this then become a jealousy issue for Ashley in Manuel's view? Because he accuses her of being jealous.
Well, you would think that he would be communicating with his baby mama anyway because he has kids. Mm-hmm. Would there not be communication based on that alone?
I don't know, because what I've heard is that the kids are living with Manuel's mom, so they are not living with the baby mama. But I don't know how much contact she actually has with the kids. Maybe he should be talking to her. But if it's true that the kids live with Manuel's mom, then why would he need to talk to the baby mama? Because he's providing money to his mom to look after the kids. He talks to the kids. He talks to his mom. Well, it seems like she would be extraneous to his everyday life.
Right. And then if she has no contact with the kids, then she doesn't really have an excuse to ask his mom anything. So apparently mm-hmm. That just gives off the view that the relationship is sour, which is why she has to go behind everyone's back and theoretically talk to Jonathan. But again, I'm not sure if I believe that.
I don't know what's going on. It's very odd that Manuel and Ashley don't communicate enough between the two of them for her to have a reasonable understanding of what's going on back in Ecuador, like what the living situation is, what the kids are doing. Like, shouldn't he at least give her the basic outline of, this is the baby mama, this is who she is, what she does, and this is the involvement she has with my kids, so we do cross paths every now and again. But it doesn't seem like any of that information has been shared, which is why she has so much interest in Manuel's phone calls to whomever it is that he's speaking to. And whomever it is that he's speaking to for a very long time, because she says it's 24/7. Obviously, it's a great deal of time that he's on the phone. So what is he talking about? And who is he talking about it to?
Well, she speaks Spanish, so...
Yeah, but I don't think she's eavesdropping. She's not eavesdropping. Like, he pretends, he says, oh, my conversations shouldn't be supervised. But if she was actually eavesdropping, she would know what's going on in his life.
I had a thought.
Tell it.
Right. But if it's his private life, so she doesn't need to know any of this.
Yeah, I understand. But the double standard there is his private life is shared with whichever friend or family member he's on the phone with, but not with his own wife, who is, in absolutely legal terms, his family.
No.
Yeah.
No.
No. It's so weird.
It's almost like she's a placeholder. And I've said this before. He only wants his green card and then he's going to vacate. So I think that's why he's all like, you don't get to know all these things because why? I'm going to leave you anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Are we done with them?
I'm always done with them before we even start.
Our final couple of tonight are the fortunate Sophie and Rob. Yay! Sophie gets to answer to Rob for her past relationship. Isn't she lucky? She gets to apologize 1,000 times for having had a past in which she engaged in a romantic relationship with somebody else.
At the age of 15.
Yeah, which was not a serious relationship.
This whole thing was so aggravating, and I think it really highlighted her naivete, her mm-hmm. immaturity, and it allowed Rob to do, you know, his posturing and his talking down to her. And like you said last week, like he was gonna hang this over her head, and he was gonna use it to like excuse all of his behaviors because this one is so much worse.
Of course. Ugh. Did you hear how he said, "You just brought your ex to this country and lied about having a relationship with him"? First of all, Sophie did not bring this man to the US. Callum happened to be traveling, wanted to see Sophie. He had already planned to go, so he's going to meet up with her. She did not bring him. And she lied about having a relationship. Okay, first of all, she didn't lie. She didn't say, "I never had a relationship with this guy," although you could say it's a lie by omission because she didn't mention it. But thirdly, it's not a relationship. They were 15 and they dated briefly. That is not a relationship. Like, he just goes to extremes. You brought your ex to this country. What?
No. Anything to minimize her, to make her feel small, which is what you said last week as well, to make her feel super small so that she comes crawling back. Oh, I'm so sorry. It's just so sickening to watch.
Totally.
Like, grow up, both of you, which honestly I think is way too much to ask. And just like, get off my TV. Cause like, I used to like Sophie, but now just the sound of her voice is irritating. And, you know, everything about Rob is irritating. But what I found to be really, I guess, the most angering was just the way that he was like pouting when he was leaning against the wall. Like, "Oh no, you've hurt me." Just his facial expressions. Like, "You're such a piece of shit, man. Like, what is wrong with you?"
He was being so manipulative.
Yes.
She was apologizing over and over and over again. And even though she was apologizing, which she really didn't need to, because she was just a kid. It was not a relationship. And she certainly did not bring this man to the United States. He just had that look on his face, and his shirt was open, of course, for dramatic effect, because everybody wants to look at my chest. And he's looking down. He's like, "Oh, like, I'm so hurt. You've done me so wrong." He can't even make eye contact with her because he's just devastated by this awful thing that she's done. She's done nothing. She's done dick all. And you're treating her like she's basically murdered somebody. And he just cannot cope with a situation where he is not the victim.
Yeah.
He always has to be the victim.
Yeah.
So even Callum comes out to talk to them because he sees that things aren't going well outside with the Sophie and Rob in their discussion. And he explains this was not serious. Their feelings were not serious. The dating was not serious. Rob won't accept Callum's explanation, his words, and Sophie resorts to the only thing that she knows how to do, which is to fawn over Rob. She curls up in his arm and puts her head on his chest. Give me a break. I wish she could grow a backbone. I really wish she had the tools and the wisdom and the knowledge to stand up to Rob and say, "You know what? I've apologized several times because I can see that you're hurt. But honestly, I didn't do anything wrong with my having had a past. And the fact that you can't deal with it now, that you can't accept my apology and move on, means that I need to extricate myself from the situation and leave you alone for a bit," because he just needs to grow up, move on.
Why would he though? Because she's playing directly into the game that he wants to play. He's getting exactly what he wants out of this.
But that's the thing.
And now she's moving back home.
Yeah. This situation causes Sophie, and he knows that this is what she's going to do. She goes into full-on repair mode. "I'm going to fix this. I'm going to take on all of the responsibility of this situation. I'm going to admit my wrong. I'm going to apologize so that I can fix things," because that's what she does. She wants to fix things. And she even goes as far as to tell Callum that she can't see him anymore because her relationship with her husband is more important than her relationship with this friend that she's had since she was a teenager. Crazy. So no more contact with Callum. Okay. If it had been a situation where Sophie had had an affair with Callum, I could see that that would be a reasonable thing to do, but this is not that situation. She does not need to remove herself from this friendship that she's had most of her life. And then Rob can't appreciate any of the efforts that Sophie is making in order to repair things between them. He just keeps moving the goalposts like he did last week. He keeps finding something else that he can find fault with Sophie for in order to keep her in this state of having to apologize and having to, you know, beseech him to come back to her, to be the one who is supplicant to him. And he even says, Sophie needs to do something very quickly to make it up to me if she thinks she's going to make it work.
Dangling that carrot.
What? It's so sick. It's so twisted.
And when he said that, the first thing that popped into my head was that flower that from the very first time he got her that flower where we were debating on whether or not he stole it out of someone's garden. Is that the kind of gesture he's looking for? Oh, no. That was a big enough gesture for him to give to her, but the gesture that she needs to give to him is going to have to be like the entire world.
Exactly. And that's why it all plays out exactly the way that he wanted it to, which is that he keeps her in this state of perpetual flux. Like she's highly, highly anxious. She doesn't know if she's going to get him back. And she's got to try everything she possibly try in order to make things better between them. And that means giving him what he really wants, which is for her to move back immediately. And so she does.
It's not going to be enough, though. He's still going to hang it over her head. And nope. It's never, ever, ever going to be enough.
No, because as we saw a couple of weeks ago, even when they're living together, even when things are exactly the way he wants, he's got a wife, it's Sophie, she's living at home with him, the toilet paper is too much. There's always a new thing that Rob is going to find to belittle her with, to demean her with, to make her feel like she is wanting, that there's something wrong with her, and she's going to try to fix it constantly over and over and over again. It's that vicious cycle of the narcissist. They devalue you, they discard you, then they hoover you back up again. They love bomb you, they devalue you, they discard you, and then they hoover you. I mean, classic.
And then you pick up those breadcrumbs when they do love bomb you because you know mm-hmm. that things will get better. But then yep. you also know that things are going to get so much worse after that.
Yep.
Well, yep. just throw them out with the trash. We've been saying that since the very beginning.
Yes, we have. So that's the end of the episode. Are we happy now?
I'm glad it's over.
Yeah, me too. Me too, me too, me too. So, so glad it's over because that was hard to watch. All right, so next week we've got Lauren and Alexi coming back. And Lauren seems to be talking to her friends and family about this mommy makeover surgery that she had done. She seems to be having to stand her ground to defend herself. While they say, no, you shouldn't do it. She's going, yeah, it's my body and I want to.
Yeah, how about some counseling for that body dysmorphia?
Nobody would ever resort to that, Amy. It's too sensible.
All right.
We want to pay doctors thousands and thousands of dollars to put plastic in our bodies, and then we'll feel better.
Okay. All right. If you have the money and the time to heal, and your body's going to stand up to it, fine.
Yep. Patrick and Thais arrive in Brazil, and Thais's dad, as usual, is not impressed with Patrick. Uh-oh. So we have a little bit of drama there. Sophie confesses to her friend Kay that she's not been sleeping with Rob, which is interesting.
Didn't they make a comment that something wasn't working?
Yes, Kay was saying that. So I don't know what's going on there. We'll find out soon, maybe. Then we have Kobe being confronted by Emily about his past. So this is going to go back to the information she got at the handball game. Then Liz doesn't have any words. She's unable to speak because it looks like Ed has done a runner. And I hope he runs and never stops running until he falls off the edge of the planet, which is flat, by the way. Did you know that?
I've heard conjecture.
Lastly, we have Mahmoud and Nicole reaching a breaking point. His bags are packed, and it looks like the friends, because this will be the same evening that we started in this episode, her friends are blocking him from leaving the apartment, which I really dislike.
No,
when people stand in the doorway. He leaves anyway?
Yeah.
Oh, or juicy. At least
we see the door close.
Okay. Lot more to be seen in this season. You look so excited. Okay.
All right. I'll do my best. I've tried to put positive spins on this. I've tried. I'm so sorry. I'm trying.
Mm-hmm. That's okay. We are all just doing our best. That's all we can ask.
Yeah.
Before we go, if you're enjoying the 90 Day Fiancé Honestly podcast, please subscribe to or give our show a follow. And if you have another moment, please rate us and help other 90 Day fans to find our show. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, everyone.
See you next week.